actually, we would like to see a broader ban. Yes.
Good morning. In spite of the somewhat awkwardness of using a microphone to speak to a small but august group of colleagues, and my own jet lag, I, like many of you, came here jet lagged after travel. But unlike most of you who have had the fortitude to be here for most of the conference, I'm just arriving, and the reason for that is that I came back home from a two-week trip to South Africa a couple of days ago, and since the topic of this conference as a whole is public health without boundaries, I'm hoping to be able to share a couple of things I saw there that relate to our topic of housing and health, although in the interest of time, I'm not going to start there. I'm from California Breathing, which is a grant-funded program funded primarily by the CDC with some state funding from tobacco tax money as well. And we focus on public health and prevention of asthma as opposed to clinical aspects of asthma. As a state program, there are many things we can't do that other people are able to do very well. We don't do the on-the-ground work. We do, however, fund some of it in small amounts. We can bring people together who normally can't get together otherwise. We can do convening, and we can provide technical assistance, and we can provide a certain kind of perspective from the state level, just as we need the perspective of our local partners in order to know what the heck we're saying. A few basic facts about asthma in California. About 3.7 million adults and 1.7 million children in the state have been diagnosed with asthma at some point. About 2.1 million adults and 827,000 children in California currently have asthma. Remember that we have a state of about 37 million people. So these numbers are representative of percentages that are probably very similar to those of other states and areas around the country. Children miss an average of 2.6 days of school per year as a result of asthma in our state. We have asthma disparities, as everyone does. Age, asthma-related ER visits are 2 times higher for children. Racially and ethnically based disparities are similar to those in other parts of the country. Blacks have a 30% higher prevalence of asthma than whites in our state. Asians and Hispanics have a lower prevalence overall than other racial groups, but further analysis does seem to indicate that certain subgroups have higher rates than the average, Filipinos and Puerto Ricans in particular. And income-based disparities, as we all know, are huge. The thing is that when it comes to where people live, wherever they live, whatever kind of housing structure they live in, people who are under the federal poverty level have more serious symptoms and than people who live at 200% or higher of the federal poverty level. And the thing is, though, that, of course, I don't know how many of you have actually worked in the arena of healthy housing, but, you know, it makes perfect sense that if, as was referred to, the building envelope isn't tight, the structures are falling apart, the pipes are leaking, there's wet spots on the ceiling that you see are turning into moldy areas, there's openings where roaches and rodents can get in. These all leave room for asthma triggers and all kinds of other health problems. And who's more likely to live in those buildings? Poor people. And as a result, also, those people are more likely to have problems with respiratory illness. You know, similar thing is seen with ER and urgent care visits. Asthma triggers are so varied that when we started looking at doing housing work in our program, which is our newest program component, we looked to people around the country in Boston and other places who had been doing this work, and we talked to our California asthma partners, and what they said is, you know, if we're going to address dust mites and mold and moisture and cockroaches and tobacco and all these things, poor heating systems and all of these things, then we really need to take an integrated approach. So part of my job as being from a state agency is to state the obvious and shed some light on it. So what we did was we took the good work of the National Center for Healthy Housing and their approach, which is to use an integrated healthy housing approach that's not focused exclusively on asthma, even though we are focused primarily on asthma. And I don't even know where that sound came from. And the idea is that if a house is kept dry, clean, ventilated, heated, pest-free, contaminant-free, well-maintained, safe, and comfortable, then you're going to create the conditions in which a person with asthma can live a healthier life, as well as people with any number of other health conditions and problems. And one of the major challenges, and you could say one of the major opportunities as well, is that to do this well requires strong community linkages among partners who haven't always worked together, right? I see these heads nodding. This is the trick, right? You're talking about healthcare, and you're talking about the need for healthcare provide the need to be able to refer from the clinic setting out to not only community health workers but to legal aid workers, to nonprofit property managers, to all kinds of advocates. You know, you're talking about bringing people together, tenants being able to negotiate with property managers and landlords and having the support to do that. Sometimes when that's difficult to do because they may be immigrants and may fear retribution for any number of other reasons. So, but when these people actually are able to sit in a room and talk to each other, code enforcers included, and policymakers and politicians with healthcare providers and property owner managers and all of these people, then you start to have the conditions. Another aspect of taking an integrated approach is taking an integrated approach to the community itself. So at California Breathing, what we did was we and our partners in California Asthma Partners put on a symposium at the end of 2006 called Healthy Housing for California, Using Code Enforcement to Reduce the Impact of Asthma. And there were about 90 people who came and well represented were not only health and housing advocates, healthcare workers, but also code enforcers. And this was the thing that was new for our partners, was to be able to sit down in a room together and actually address issues of health and housing from their varied perspectives. And it was well received and made us decide as a program that we really needed to have a housing component in our actual California Breathing program. And included in that would be strategic plan implementation grants, which we use as part of our strategic plan for asthma in general. These grants are a way for us to support some of the good work that's done on the ground in these areas. One of the grants this year has gone to Californians for Pesticide Reform, who are doing a combination of policy work and education and outreach in their communities. Healthy housing education and awareness building using the National Center for Healthy Housing model, and identifying and disseminating promising local approaches to codes and code enforcement are other aspects of our housing component. What we've done is we're working with the Legal Aid Society of San Mateo County. They have a family advocacy program modeled on the Massachusetts work that was done several years ago, and they are doing research into local codes in four counties, really drilling into the codes and enforcement practices to see what's working, what's not working, what might be disseminated. I'm not going to go through these other slides because I think that I think it'll take more time and not be as useful for you. But I'd like to conclude by just saying that one of the people that I met on my recent trip to South Africa was a woman named Vicky, who is running a bed and breakfast in one of the shanty townships in Khayelitsha Township in Cape Town. And Vicky's story was that she saw after apartheid ended that people were, please bear with me, I'll make this quick. I'm okay? Okay. She found that what was happening was that people were so intrigued by what had happened and what was happening in these areas of South Africa during apartheid that tour buses were starting to go through the townships, these very poor areas, and people were kind of driving through and looking at people. And Vicky thought, well, this isn't good. People should be getting out and talking to people. So she decided to get into the robust tourist industry of Cape Town, and she began to make it possible for there to be walking tours of the townships. And she eventually was talked into modifying her modest two-level home into a bed and breakfast, where she now houses can house people in three rooms a night at a grand total of 220 rand, which is about $22 a night. And she's also on the ward council in her township, which means that she was able to talk to us about how housing gets. How the government decides who will get new houses. They have a young democracy, and as a result, they're able to have a commitment to building some new housing for people. It's slow, and it's cumbersome, and it's hard for people to believe that it's actually happening. But it is. They have created 1 million new homes, and are going for 3 million new homes. I'm telling you this story because what Vicky said is that 150 households need to get together and come up with a plan as a group. And they have to make a business plan and submit it to the Cape Town authorities. And then it gets evaluated. What Vicky understood, and this is why I'm telling this story, is that it truly does take a village, it takes a community, it takes it takes multiple players, it takes community connections, it takes business savvy, it takes an understanding of health issues to make these kinds of changes, and it takes a certain amount of political will as well. And so my hope for all of us is that in this global world, we're able to take the lessons of a third world nation with a first world economy, a first world infrastructure, which is South Africa, and apply it to our first world developed nation with pockets of extreme poverty, and learn from each other's lessons and learn from each other's successes and see where we can go with that. And I guess I'll stop there. Thanks.
Janet, will we move to the next slide?